This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th podcast. Rabia here, and I'm here this week with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I just had a very mad scramble in the last 10 minutes when I realized that there was a new Mueller indictment to read over in time for the show.
Yep. It is late Monday afternoon, and we had some breaking news, and we are definitely going to discuss that. But before we get started, let me just wish you a belated happy birthday. I just noticed that it was your birthday the other day, I think.
I had a super exciting day of editing podcasts for my birthday.
Oh, that's a good life right there. Well, for your birthday, I was in Tahoe.
That's pretty nice.
I was in Tahoe. Yeah, a friend of mine turned 40, and that's where she wanted to celebrate. So I spent a couple days out there with other kids. I haven't slept so much in the last 2 years, so I feel good. But I guess we are returning to a complete shit show. The last 4 days, 5 days has been crazy. Last week, I spoke to Siraj, and I think when we talked, the NATO summit was just getting started. So I don't think we got deeply into it. But I wanted to first, before we get into like some of the, I think the big meaty stories, talk about, have you heard of this new series called Who is America?
Yes, and I can't bring myself to watch the trailer because I really hate shows like that. I have this, like, sympathetic embarrassment. Well, like, if they're embarrassed, I get embarrassed. I just don't like doing it. So I am so far boycotting it. My husband watched it and laughed his ass off. So okay. I know it's funny, but I have not been looking myself to actually listen myself.
Well, the first episode is out. And, you know, I mean, I think, yeah. Okay, look, Sacha Baron Cohen, he is ridiculous. He has been doing this shit forever. And I don't understand at this point how he can show up at any politician or anybody's door and people don't realize who the hell he is. I mean, he punked Trump years ago. He's been punking people forever. But basically, what I think is interesting about this show is, I mean, it's called Who is America? I think he's trying to hold up a mirror to us and show us this, the absurdity. I mean, not that we don't know, but some of the clips I've seen, and I haven't watched the first episode, which just dropped, I think it's a whole series on Showtime, was really breathtaking. He has a couple of the pranks he's pulled. He's posed as like an Israeli police officer who has started a program called Kinder Guardians, in which this program is going to teach children as young as kids in first grade how to use arms, munitions. So he shows up at, like, you know, he talks to different politicians, GOP people, gun rights folks, and convinces them to endorse this program, okay? And then they do it. Anyway, at least the clips I saw were breathtaking. I mean,
Kinder Guardians.
It's a brilliant name, I say. But he even gives them fake data. He says the science shows that, like, children can see in slow motion, so they're better. I'm not kidding.
I cannot watch that show.
Oh, Susan, you have to do it. I'm going to watch it. I'll report back on it later. But anyway, I just had to put that out there. If you guys haven't heard of it, take a look, because it will be a very painful but maybe much needed laugh at all of this. But anyway.
I would like to know who we talked to that did not endorse Kinder Guardians. There had to be some, right? Hopefully there were some.
There was one, at least in a clip that I saw, there was one, I think, House member, a Republican, who said, I can't just endorse something I don't know about. Like, I don't know anything about this program. You can't just show up. Who would do that? And then all these other people who did, including Dana Rohrabacher. I mean, like, it's pretty crazy.
But you can just show up and not endorse something, affirmatively not endorse something that involves arming five-year-olds. That's pretty, I don't think you need much data or much thought or consideration. You can just go ahead and, like, hard no on that stuff.
Nope, in theory. That's not how it worked. Not how it worked. I mean, he also apparently brings down some liberals too in this, but it's interesting. I mean, Sarah Palin and Joe Arpaio, I think there are a couple of folks who, Roy Moore, he punked a number of other people into like attending a fake support Israel conference and made up an anthem to Israel. And these folks, before the series came out, of putting out statements saying he tricked us. No, he didn't trick you. You just showed up for something you thought was real. I mean, that shows how low you are willing to go. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened at NATO, because there's so much stuff that has happened since a week ago. But here's a concise summary of how Donald Trump threw a grenade and ran away and fucked it up real good. He called the European Union a foe. of the United States. He embarrassed the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, and said that she mishandled Brexit. By the way, he said that during an interview, a recorded interview, then later during a press conference said, I didn't say that. And then they released the audio of the interview in which he actually did say that. And then much of what his grievances with NATO, with Trump, have always been like other countries are not stepping up and paying their fair share towards defense spending. Apparently, there was also an emergency session. And in that session, they had the Georgian and Ukrainian presidents who were giving their presentation. And in the middle of it, Trump said, leave. He said, okay, we're done with you now. Because they were trying to explain why they can't just bump up their contribution. They have a legal process. They have to go to parliament. And what Trump does is astonishing. He turns to the Turkish president, okay, Recep Erdogan, who is a complete authoritarian. And he says, except for Erdogan over here, he does things the right way. And he fist bumps the Turkish president. Unbelievable.
He wants to be a dictator. He's well on his way towards doing that. That's all there is to it. It's almost hard to analyze using like traditional frameworks of foreign policy because there is no traditional framework. There's no plan. There's no U.S. national interest at play. It's Trump's interest at play and only his interest. And what he wants is to be a dictator. I mean, I know that sounds really glib and oversimplified, but that's what's going on here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's so clear in terms of like the kinds of people and processes that he supports. I mean, like, even as he left for NATO, he attacked the media in the U.S., and he continued to do it, you know, while he was there. During the press conference with Theresa May, he stopped Jim Acosta, you know, from CNN, the anchor of CNN, and said, no questions from CNN, you're fake news. It's his theme. When he left NATO, you know, a lot of the allies were very shocked and shook. What's interesting is, as he was doing that over there, others, including, I think, Pompeo, were tweeting and sending messages of support that, no, we support our allies. So there was all kinds of mixed signals coming around. And there was a senior fellow at a political institute who said that he thinks that European NATO members are just trying to wait him out. They just don't give a crap. And interestingly, because he's so unpopular in Europe, that at this point, the way he's approaching the issue of defense spending is if they tried to increase it now, it would look like they were like kowtowing to him. So they're actually not even going to do it. They're just going to like ignore him till he's gone, which is taking a long time.
And that comment you mentioned they made about CNN, I know it's Fox News, but it was really jarring to the point to see like one of Fox's quote unquote like realish journalists just right away take the question that Trump gave him as if what had just happened with CNN hadn't occurred. And then, of course, we have Sarah Sanders tweeting that day or the next day that CNN was like rude and that's why they were like dealt with that way. They didn't want to like mistrain the media by encouraging them to ask questions like that, which is not what happened. There was no sort of like, I mean, one, it doesn't matter if there was like disrespect, quote unquote.
Well, he hadn't even asked the question. Yeah. Nobody even knew what the question was at that point. And CNN that same day actually had a long-standing scheduled interview with Michael Bolton, which the White House canceled, not Bolton himself. The White House canceled it after this whole exchange. And then Sanders tweeted about that too. So anyway, all right. So well, he effed up NATO. Then he went on to the UK where there were massive protests, had tea with the Queen, apparently kept her waiting. Do you watch that whole spectacle?
No. Again, I was like trying to minimize exposure to like the embarrassment that I was feeling. I mean, I did watch the big Trump baby blimp. That was kind of funny. I watched him walk in front of the Queen, which was kind of funny as well. In an awful, awful, horrifying
way. He couldn't
figure
out where she went. She's kind of tiny. She's kind of tiny. But he does this to his wife all the time. He just walks away. He does not wait for women or anybody. He just walks.
Or push them out of the way. Not give a shit. He didn't push anyone this year. Last year, he like shoved his way to the front. So I guess he's like.
That is correct.
Kind of approved. I mean, this whole thing is a farce. Like you said, the leaders in Europe are just trying to find a way to endure this because they're. I mean, they can only assume that America is going to be not this crazy forever. If it is, then, well, everyone's screwed and they'll have to massively and much more quickly readapt their foreign policy plans, which they're already doing on a slow scale, but they have not already like, done a mass realignment like they'll have to do if this continues much longer.
Well, I mean, I don't know how quickly, you know, the thing is like, if it wasn't for GOP staying silent on all of this stuff, then I might say, yeah, maybe it'll just all blow over. But now I wonder, Why would it? The entire party is compromised. That's what it seems like at this point.
The truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong, not for long enough, and or forget to change the brush on time. And that's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than being better at brushing. But not Quip. So what makes Quip so different? For starters, Quip is an electric toothbrush, and it's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while still packing just the right amount of punch to help get your teeth clean. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes with guiding impulses that remind you when to switch sides. Next, Quip subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Quip also comes with a mount that sticks right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel wherever you take your teeth. And finally, everyone loves Quip. They were on Oprah's O-List, named one of Time's Best Inventions, and is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/45th, spelled getquip, getquip.com/45th.
But anyway, so as all this is happening in Europe, over here we had a really explosive 10-hour hearing. Peter, is it Strzok? Is that how you pronounce it?
They finally clarified that in this meeting. Okay. That was probably the biggest thing came out of it. It is Strzok, like the word strike, the passive strike.
Yeah. I watched some of the hearing. I couldn't watch the whole thing. I was traveling, like I said, I was out of town, but it was pretty crazy. This is the guy, just to refresh the folks, people's memory, he was the FBI agent, I guess, whatever, official, who was in charge of the Hillary Clinton email server investigation. And he also kind of headed up the Russia investigation, the Russia meddling at the beginning of it. He was then booted off of it. But he also was the guy who was having an affair, who was married, having an affair with another FBI agent, Lisa Page. And his text messages were caught, basically. And in those messages were not just about his affair, but, you know, during the presidential campaign, he said a lot of bullshit about Trump. You know, he was like, you know, we're going to stop it. We're going to, this can't happen. I mean, like, and so this hearing was basically, the purpose should have been to interrogate whether or not he actually did anything actionable to, I guess, to assist the Hillary's campaign or to, right? I mean, like, is that what they're trying to figure out? What are they trying to figure out?
They were trying to make a point. They're trying to get some clips they could use for advertising and for campaign promos later on. That was the real goal here. I don't know what they expected to come from it because they have to know. The saner ones have to know that there is no there there. So by having this hearing in public, there wasn't really another way it could have gone. They'd had private hearings before, and then, of course, stuff was leaked selectively by Republicans, presumably. So Strzok wanted to have a public one, and he basically handed their asses to them in terms of their what they're doing and showmanship and the whole, this is about text messages. And if you take anyone's year of text messages, especially to the person they have an affair with, there's all kinds of shit you can pull out of it and put out of context. I mean, all kinds of things. And basically, all it mostly consisted of was him being asked about, like, text exchanges, him explaining, like, well, no, that's a text message. That's what you mean by text. And pointing out the obviousness that if his whole plan was to harm Trump and harm his chances in the election by using information from the investigation against him, then how can they explain the fact that he never did that?
Right. That it wraps up with their deep state conspiracy stuff. You know, whether or not they think that there's a there, they just want to have enough distractions, I think, to cast doubt on everything that's happening, I think, on the Mueller investigation. And in fact, the hearing opened up with Trey Gowdy asking directly a question about the ongoing Mueller investigation. And Strzok said, nope, I cannot answer that. Like, I mean, counsel has told me not to answer anything about the ongoing investigation. I can't do that. Then he was threatened with contempt because he refused to answer. But then they moved on to subjects like Daryl Issa actually asking him to read text messages that he had sent about Trump, read them out loud. And so let's listen to this very brief exchange right here.
And I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness is always an issue. Mr. Chairman, this is intolerable harassment
of the witness.
What's wrong with that? You need your medication.
The gentleman controls the time.
This is a guy, by the way, who worked on Trump's campaign and supported him, and so he's not bothered by Trump's infidelity. But then the House Democrats erupted, and one of them was like, have you not taken your medications? And they're like, this is a disgrace and all that. But my absolutely favorite part of the hearing was Raskin, Rep. Raskin. He basically was like, let's take this Republican conspiracy head on.
But there are a couple of facts they can't get around. Number one, the IG found no partisan bias affecting the official investigation. Number two, Attorney General Sessions is a Republican appointed by Donald Trump. Rod Rosenstein is a Republican appointed by Donald Trump. James Comey is a Republican appointed by Donald Trump. FBI Director Wray is a Republican appointed by Donald Trump. And Robert Mueller is a lifelong Republican. So this would have to be a Republican conspiracy. So I'm looking for evidence of the Republican conspiracy, and all I could find were the kind of statements that you've been arraigned on today. So I want to ask you about those statements. In the spring of 2016, Senator Ted Cruz called Donald Trump a, quote, sniveling coward, a pathological liar, and a serial philanderer. Was this attack on Trump by Senator Ted Cruz a coordinated part of a deep state conspiracy that you organized?
No.
On August 8th, 2016, Senator Marco Rubio said Donald Trump was, quote, unworthy of being our president. Was this attack part of a deep state conspiracy that you organized?
No.
In October of 2016, Speaker Paul Ryan said, I am not going to defend Donald Trump, not now, not in the future. Was this fleeting outburst of moral courage part of a deep state conspiracy that you organized?
No.
Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called Donald Trump a moron. Former EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt said he's an empty vessel when it comes to the Constitution. Steve Bannon said he's like an 11-year-old child. General H.R. McMaster referred to Donald Trump reportedly as a dope and an idiot with the intelligence of a kindergartner. Karl Rove called him a complete idiot. Representative Duncan Hunter said he's an a-hole, but he's our a-hole. And the director of the National Economic Council, Gary Cohn, reportedly sent out an email describing Trump as an idiot surrounded by clowns. Were all of these vituperative negative characterizations of Donald Trump part of a deep state GOP conspiracy engineered by you and your friends?
No.
Were any of these statements part of a conspiracy you organized?
No.
Now, although this conspiracy does appear to be overwhelmingly Republican, if it exists, balance compels me to ask you about my hero, Bruce Springsteen. Unlike the others who are all Republican, Springsteen's a Democrat, and he said, the Republic is under siege by a moron. Did you tell him to say that?
No.
Was it part of a deep state conspiracy to criticize the president?
No.
I mean, if you read the text messages between them, I mean, between Strzok and Page, you can kind of see why the two of them ended up in a relationship, because the two of them just like hate everything. They just bond over hating stuff for real. And it's like their hatred is not limited to anyone or anything. It's pretty all encompassing. But by the end, it was very Trump focused because Trump is a fucking embarrassing human being. Which in private conversations between two people, that's going to be reflected. It does, however, call into question why they were put on Operation Crossfire Hurricane at all. Like the IG's report said, like they should not have had the same agents who worked on the Hitler investigation, also on the Trump investigation. I'm sure there are, I mean, just by dividing that workload, it would have minimized any kind of appearance of conflict, and it would have minimized problems like this, where there's political grandstanding over nothing.
Well, I mean, even if they hadn't been, then the hearing would have been about their work vis-a-vis just the Hillary probe then. I mean, like, they would have said, well, I feel like either way, you know, all it is like this is the House GOP. They want to kick up enough dust that leaves a lot of Americans confused. Most people are not following this as closely as some of us are. So they have no idea what's really going on, but they have kind of a big picture that things are not as clean as we think, right? Like, it's all tainted. The FBI is tainted. And Trump himself keeps basically undermining our law enforcement intelligence agencies by saying the same kind of shit.
And what's lost in all of this is that we, in fact, have a perfect example of a politicized FBI that uses its hatred for one candidate to tilt campaign conditions in the other one's favor, because it is notoriously openly known that the New York field office hates Hillary Clinton's guts to a pathological degree. If you read the Comey and the Loretta Lynch testimony or statements from the IG report, it's clear that they were operating and making decisions on the basis of how not to have the New York office ruin everything. And it seems like Comey's decisions were made in part to prevent the New York office from leaking stuff or from doing things that would make it more open and clear that they were trying to harm one of the candidates. So, yeah, we actually have a great example of what happens when the FBI tries to tilt an election, because it happened and no one ever talks about it.
Yeah. But, you know, as Strzok said here, he also wasn't operating alone. One of the strongest moments in the hearing was when Strzok went on for about 2.5 minutes. First of all, saying these are flippant text messages, like, you know, what the hell's wrong with you guys? But also he said, you know, I don't work alone. I have people above me. I have people below me. There's an entire system. Like, you know, I could not on my own have done all of this. There are checks and balances inside this institution. And so, yeah, it's true that maybe everybody, you know, different people in these institutions, agencies are going to have their biases, but they don't operate in vacuums. There's teams of people and there's a system there. So anyhow, so that hearing took place. I don't know what's going to come out of it. I think Paige has also been.
Oh, yeah. Oh, summoned. So Lisa Paige, after they had that little episode with Strzok, they did not want her in public. The Republicans actually were saying, like, oh, there's this like false claim that she's not cooperating. She's cooperating behind closed doors. We're having a private hearing on this. They don't want a repeat of that. So Lisa Paige has gone to Congress, but she will not repeat Strzok's performance. They will not give her a chance to repeat Strzok's performance.
Okay, because he did really well.
Because he pointed out that their conspiracies are all baseless, right, which is not good for them.
All right, so this happened on Thursday, the very next day. The very next day, 12 indictments are announced. You want to tell us about that, Susan?
And so let's start off in the one thing that someone pointed out to me that I think is kind of sticks to me a lot. The information in this indictment about what was done to basically hack the election and Russian efforts to interfere with American sovereignty.
Yep. 12 intelligence officers, Russian intelligence officers, not random folks.
It's now totally public in this indictment. And Reality Winner, the former contractor who just got 5-year sentence for leaking this to The Intercept. Yeah. I mean, that's not an excuse for leaking top secret info, but also this stuff could have come out way sooner. Obviously, it can come out now. And it is strange to think that Trump and all of his supporters and all of his people who were helping him during the election that were possibly involved in this stuff aren't going to suffer anything and haven't yet. And Reality Winner, who just leaked information about what they were doing, is getting 5 years in prison. But what we know now is basically what we've known all along. We have more data. We have more confirmation of what's happening. And we have ideas about what kind of proof they have to support it. But it's what you'd expect. The GRU was hacking emails, using them in ways to try and undermine Clinton's electoral chances.
Right. But this went beyond what I expected. And the reason it went beyond what I expected was that, like, for example, indictment includes information about an August 15th, 2016. I mean, August of 2016. You know, the GRU got a request for stolen documents from a candidate for U.S. Congress, and the GRU responded using their online persona and sent the candidate the stolen documents that they requested. So there is a general there is some information that's seeping out into the GOP, I guess. I mean, I'm assuming it's a GOP member or somebody who ran for, you know, office on that side. But people know that this organization is providing this kind of stuff, and people are making requests for stolen documents. It's not just that the Russian hackers are approaching candidates and approaching Trumpers and approaching others and saying, hey, we could provide you. But it's that people are aware. Like, that's what I don't understand. So who, either Roger Stone or others are spreading this, you know, hey, you got a request?
Well, the surface story is that they're cooperating with, an unknown hacker, the Guccifer, which is not a Russian, it's just Guccifer, some internet guy, who they're asking for dirt. So the probable Roger Stone stuff's in there as well, but the the ones you're talking about, the ones who set up Guccifer, is like the Florida GOP people.
So you're saying, okay, so their out would be that we didn't know it was Russian intelligence officers. We just thought it was like somebody online. But they do. They knew they were asking for stolen documents,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like Mueller's got the proof that, no, they knew exactly who they were asking it from. I mean, look at the fact that, you know, the day that the Russian hackers tried to break into the Clinton servers, July 27, 2016, the same day, same exact day that Trump goes on TV and says, hey, Russia, can you look for her 30,000 emails? I mean, we all remember that moment. I feel like there, you know, that he's got evidence that these people knew exactly who they were dealing with. But I guess we'll find out.
I think they probably, and this, I think there's some truth to it. I think they didn't care. They just wanted the info. I don't think it really mattered to them necessarily, or to all of them necessarily, who they're getting it from. That's not an excuse. That's not a legal excuse. It's not a moral excuse. But I don't think necessarily it means they were seeking out Russia, per se. They were just seeking out the dirt from whatever source they could get it from. Apparently recklessly unconcerned for the amount of harm that could do to their ability to function in the government and their ability to act in American interests. But right now, I don't know if it's ever confirmed. I know there's at least two Florida Republicans who are the ones referenced in the Mueller indictment. Indirectly, they're not named, and possibly a third. And this is not the first time their involvement has been talked about. There's been reports on it, but this is the first time it's really been detailed in the way it is.
Do you think they'll be indicted?
It depends what exactly they did.
All right. Well, the indictment also goes on to say that Russian hackers got access to state board of elections, stole information, related to about 500,000 voters. It says it's not clear which state this was, but what's interesting is that the day after these indictments came out, a news story broke here that in Maryland, which is where I live, officials said the FBI just told them this week that the state's voter registration platform was purchased by a Russian oligarch in 2015, a year before the election, and the state officials had no idea. The FBI said that apparently they didn't indicate there's any breach, but the state's going to do a full review, and I'm assuming a lot of states are going to be doing a lot of reviews at this point, but that's weird.
I still think this is moving towards finding out that there was some actual direct access and use of state databases. Not necessarily, not that votes were changed, not that that was done, but one, information was obtained from these registries that was used to direct election operations. And I still think possibly, too, that they were manipulating voter rolls to kick off voters or to discourage voters and to subtly tilt the election towards Trump. That's pure speculation right now. But it fits with a lot of what we're seeing, and it's definitely not ruled out. I mean, what else were they trying to do?
Right. I mean, like, the indictment does the indictment clearly say that it didn't actually impact the election results? Like you said, that there's no evidence that actual votes have been manipulated. But yeah, what they were trying to do, I mean, like, there have been some reports about how after these hacks took place, the Trump campaign made some very sudden and major shifts in how they were, where they were spending their money and how they were campaigning. And that might have been like why they were doing these things. But
I'm not convinced by that. From what I mean, I would not say I'm a stats nerd or totally familiar with all the polls they had going on here. But I've seen a few people like Nate Silver from 538 talking about how that those changes would have been
right. Normal, anyway.
Yeah, they make sense based on the available data. You don't need to get into any kind of private info. The public data available would have suggested those moves.
Right. True. But I'm looking for the why. What are you doing with all that shit then? All right, so these indictments came on kind of an embarrassing moment for Trump, a moment that would ordinarily pressure a reasonable human being into maybe acting a little bit differently, but they came 2 days before his meeting with Putin, which happened today, and I've been following all morning, and has been kind of mind-boggling to watch. Did you watch the press conference, by the way?
Oh, God, I did. But for some background here, there's a basic question that's never been answered by the Trump administration, which is why the hell this summit was happening. Summits don't just, like, happen. World leaders don't just casually, like, have one-on-one meetings, or even with, like, your entire staff. A summit, there's a purpose, there's a plan, there's a reason. You're taking time out of your very busy schedule to have a meeting with a foreign leader. There was never a reason here given. There was no explanation. Basically, it was a chance to get Trump and Putin alone together for a long period of time. And that, as far as we can tell, is the only purpose of this whole event in Helsinki.
And, you know, I was listening to an interview of a former senior advisor to Reagan, and he talked about how, you know, in the past, when you have these kinds of major, like, summits with, you know, another global head of state, you spend days and weeks in preparation. Trump was golfing this weekend and literally just showed up, apparently. I think he's golfing in Scotland. But Trump's remarks, like his opening remarks during today's press conference, might give us an idea of why. And this is, you know, what he's been purporting to say, is that basically he wants relations to thaw. He wants to build a good relationship with Russia and with Putin. And this is not new. It's not news. He's been saying this for quite a while. Before he had the summit took place in Helsinki, and before in Finland, and, you know, he embarrassed himself as soon as he got there, because he got there and he talked to the Finnish prime minister and told him how, you know, things are great at NATO and, like, I'm glad we all got along. And, of course, Finland's not part of NATO, but whatever. anyway, so right before heading into it, a series of tweets goes out this morning, which are clearly not written by him, but he's already like, no matter how well I do the summit, even if I was given the great city of Moscow as retribution for all the sins and evils committed by Russia, he can't write like that. I would return to criticism that it wasn't good enough. But what actually happened was not even a matter of not being good enough. It was actually kind of reprehensible. And it was, I mean, like, I don't know, the media and Twitter has been kind of aghast for the last few hours.
Which is, on the one hand, okay, it's understandable because that was pretty horrific. But on the other hand, it's nothing new. This is nothing that's not been going on for 2 years now.
But it's happening on a shared stage. It's a shared stage.
That is more jarring. But at the same time, it just removes one more layer of plausible deniability. But it was a pretty thin one anyway. We know that Trump is openly colluding with Russia. That's not in doubt. Of course, a lot of the media, the TV news, has to pretend this is not something that we know, but we know it because we watched it on the stand today. We've watched it for a while, but now there is absolutely zero reason for anyone in the United States or elsewhere to doubt that Trump is colluding with Russia to affect future elections, because Russia is still trying to interfere in U.S. sovereignty and U.S. elections. there's a recent statement from his government saying that the warning light's blinking red in terms of election interference. So what Trump did today was just to green light all of that and to say, keep on going. I'll give you protection. I'll give you cover.
Keep on keeping on.
You're not going to have any. Yeah, there'll be no blowback for what you're doing to attack America. And there's no other word for it. Like, there is simply no other accurate description of what we just witnessed other than he is colluding with Russia to interfere in elections.
Well, let's talk about what happened in the course of this day. They began by having a one-on-one meeting, I'm assuming interpreters were in the room, although it's hard for me to believe.
There were interpreters.
There were, right? Yeah. That Putin doesn't know. I bet you Putin knows English. I bet you he does. But he's just...
He does. But any leader would want to use their strongest language, or right, when they're very comfortable in.
So they had like a 2 hour and 20 minute, very, very long meeting. And I got to be honest, I don't even know if Trump has enough words to fill a meeting that long, but apparently they got, anyway, 2.5 hour. And then they had a press conference. So they came out and gave their public remarks, and they talked about what they purportedly talked about. So I want to talk briefly about...
Oh, did you catch at the very beginning of the press conference when that one reporter got dragged out? Did you ever see what that was about or why?
Right before the press conference began, he was actually apparently a protester and maybe not a reporter, held up a sign that said something about a weapons ban, some weapons ban treaty. And that's all I've been able to glean. I even paused the video to try to read it, but I couldn't quite make it out. Either way, security grabbed him and dragged him out. I don't think he was an actual reporter. So, but you know what? There's some awesome journalists there who ask some really straight and hard questions. And we have some great audio of that too, which we'll listen to in a little bit. But
it's great, the word we're looking for here.
I mean, they ask tough questions. I mean, great audio. Yeah. I know. They ask tough questions, and I say the audio is great because it's good to finally hear it. I'm so sick of only seeing Trump being interviewed by journalists like Fox journalists who don't do shit, who do not ever push back, or even others like who are not Fox journalists. In the past, we've seen this where he's been interviewed, totally given softballs, no follow-up, just bullshit. So anyway, another interesting thing was as they entered Helsinki, the city of Helsinki put up, I think, like 300 signs across the city that said, "Welcome to the land of the free press," which was great. Anyway, so neither Trump nor Putin were able to escape real questions from the press. But so let's talk a little bit about, like, apparently what they talked about. I mean, you asked the question, what was the summit about? What was that meeting about? Why? And this is what Putin said they talk about. Number one, it sounds like both of them agree that the Cold War is over. They want a warm relations between the country. You know, the situation's changed. And that seems to be the overarching theme of their meeting. Interestingly enough, the one point that they seemed to knock heads on just slightly was that Russia made it clear that they didn't like the fact that that the U.S. withdrew from the Iran deal. In his opening remarks, Trump was like, basically he pushed back on that a bit. And he's like, we believe Iran's a threat to regional security.
Yeah. And that's Russia's ally in the region. So right. Unsurprisingly, they're not thrilled about that.
Right. And also, I mean, you know, Syria was another issue that they discussed and how to basically bring, you know, peace back to Syria and do something about the refugee situation. There are millions and millions of Syrian refugees everywhere. Putin specifically talked about the pressure on Europe with Syrian refugees, which on one hand, yes, that's true. And in places like Turkey that has like 5 million Syrian refugees and other places too. But on the other hand, it also is about preserving that a European culture, which Trump referenced when he was at NATO.
You know, what we didn't even get into was the like openly white nationalist rhetoric.
Oh, yeah.
Trump was using at NATO.
I totally forgot about that.
Just a footnote. Just a footnote to this week. The president is embracing white nationalist, white supremacist talking points in a NATO meeting. But no big deal. We forgot about that because there was so much else going on.
Oh, by the way, and when he was doing that, Bannon gave an interview also, I can't remember what outlet, right there, right then, and said that, you know, France, Italy, people here to preserve the culture need to think about taking up arms. I mean, literally. So,
Bannon, go away for good. Just like go back to your little hole and stay there. Yeah.
They talked about also, according to Putin, that they want to create a high-level working group that bring together captains of Russian and American businesses. More oligarchs. Great. And then Trump said, basically, he said, congratulations on hosting a great World Cup, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, quoting, in both recent past and long ago, we've seen the consequences when diplomacy is left on the table. We've also seen the benefits of cooperation. He talked about working together during the Second World War. And then he's like, you know, he just said, our relationship has never been worse than it is now, but that changed as of 4 hours ago. I really believe that. He said that, he said, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt that this was a message best delivered in person. We spent a great deal of time talking about it, and President Putin may well want to address it because he feels very strongly about it, and he has an interesting idea, and wait for that idea. He said he also updated Putin on North Korea, Islamic radical terrorism, and that's about it.
I mean, the long-term goal here is to have Russia be able to adopt or achieve America's economy and for America to achieve Russia's oligarch system.
Right. Make sure that sounds like it.
The handful of, yeah. Like, that's the trade here we got going on. It's the synergy they're looking for.
Yeah. Well, then they opened up the floor for questions from the press. And we're going to play some audio of Trump responding to questions. But here's how Putin responded to questions about interference in Russian elections and the indictments. He said that Trump brought it up during their private meeting and that Putin reiterated several times that the Russian state has never interfered. It's not going to interfere into internal American affairs, including the election process. And about the 12 alleged security officers, he said, I know nothing about it. Look, this is a guy who kills his own intel officers, okay, and his, like, military officers. But he said, I need to figure it out. Trump put this question to me, and we have discussed this. The idea that Trump was alluding to, he said he's got an interesting idea, was that Putin said he is open to Mueller actually continuing to conduct the investigation by interviewing folks in Russia with members of his team present if America agrees to turn over intelligence officers, U.S. intelligence officers to Russia that he believes funneled, I guess, money to Clinton. Like, there was something there in which...
This is the June 9th meeting in 2016 at Trump Tower. This is all that stuff rehashed once again. It's the Bill Browder, yep. The whole, Magnitsky Act, brouhaha, once again. That's all it is. This is about getting rid of the sanctions, which prevent Putin from achieving an American economy with an oligarch system like he'd like to have. Not that Russia actually has a... I mean, Russia, that's the most embarrassing part about all of this. Russia is a tiny, tiny economy. It's a struggling economy. It's not a significant player in today's world in terms of economics. And it's found a way to remain relevant through these kind of attacks on other countries' national sovereignty.
Well, I think in the last week what's happened, I mean, Trump has kind of created this new world order in terms of, like, global powers. And he is, you know, he sees Russia as the, like, a global like a counterpart to the United States. I think that's how he sees Russia.
His tweet after was just that, like, the two biggest nuclear powers can't afford to be fighter. Like,
right.
He thinks he's stopping nuclear war. In his head, that's his like good thing he's achieving. Mostly he's concerned about his own pockets and about power and looking good on TV. But one of his motivations is that he thinks he can stop this nuclear war between Russia and the United States by doing this.
Right. And throwing basically all our NATO allies under the bus and exposing them basically to Russian aggression. So one thing Putin did do was clearly, I mean, he just admitted, he's like, yeah, I wanted Trump to win the 2016 election. He was asked the question. He said, yes, I did. But now I want to play audio. It's about 2 to 3 minutes worth of the questions that were posed to Trump and his answers that have elicited some really, you know, like strong responses across the board. And people have said that this is like so treasonous, so traitorous. And just so, like, just abjectly, you know, embarrassing.
You tweeted this morning that it's U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe that is responsible for the decline in U.S. relations with Russia. Do you hold Russia at all accountable for anything in particular? And if so, what would you consider them that they are responsible for?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago, a long time, frankly, before I got to office. And I think we're all to blame. I think that the United States now has stepped forward along with Russia, and we're getting together, and we have a chance to do some great things, whether it's nuclear proliferation in terms of stopping, we have to do it. Ultimately, that's probably the most important thing that we can be working on. But I do feel that we have both made some mistakes. I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. People are being brought out to the fore. So far that I know, virtually none of it related to the campaign. And they're going to have to try really hard to find somebody that did relate to the campaign. That was a clean campaign. I beat Hillary Clinton easily. And frankly, we beat her. And I'm not even saying from the standpoint, we won that race. And it's a shame that there can even be a little bit of a cloud over it. People know that. People understand it. But the main thing, and we discussed this also, is zero collusion. And it has had a negative impact upon the relationship of the two largest nuclear powers in the world. We have 90% of nuclear power between the two countries. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what's going on with the probe.
For President Putin, follow up as well. Why should Americans and why should President Trump believe your statement that Russia did not intervene in the 2016 election, given the evidence that U.S. intelligence agencies have provided? And will you consider extraditing the 12 Russian officials that were indicted last week by a U.S. grand jury?
Well, I'm going to let the president answer the second part of that question. But as you know, the whole concept of that came up perhaps a little bit before, but it came out as a reason why the Democrats lost an election, which, frankly, they should have been able to win because the Electoral College is much more advantageous for Democrats, as you know, than it is to Republicans. We won the Electoral College by a lot, 306 to 223, I believe. And that was a well-fought battle. We did a great job. And frankly, I'm going to let the president speak to the second part of your question. But just to say it one time again, and I say it all the time, there was no collusion. I didn't know the president. There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign. But to the average reader out there, they're saying, well, maybe that does. It doesn't. And even the people involved, some perhaps told misstories, although in one case, the FBI said there was no lie. There was no lie. Somebody else said there was. We ran a brilliant campaign, and that's why I'm president. Thank you.
Thank you. Question for each president. President Trump, yes. You first. Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. Who My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
So let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Why haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know, where is the server, and what is the server saying? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. Okay, thank you.
So he basically is saying, I believe Putin over my own intelligence officers. He talks endlessly on about Hillary's 30,000 emails still and where are those servers. He mentions Strzok and the FBI, and basically he's throwing the FBI under the bus. He's doing this next to Putin. He's covering for Putin. He is just like, how is he kind of, it was disgraceful. And I am wondering, how does he return to the United States after that performance on the international stage?
Oh, quite easily. He just nominated a very conservative justice to the Supreme Court. The GOP will do anything for him. They do not care. Until that guy is confirmed, until Kavanaugh is confirmed, he has a blank check to do whatever he wants because they will not touch him. The Republicans will not stop him from doing anything right now. They'll tweet a bit. They'll write, like, I'm very concerned about what Trump's doing, if that. But this, and there'll be some reaction to this because this was so extreme and so awful that more than usual will feel compelled to give some symbolic or token pretense of not liking what's going on. But they won't do anything that could jeopardize Kavanaugh's confirmation. So they will not take any serious action here. This will become an accepted part of the Trump presidency. We are now allies with Russia, and we can't hurt Russia about what Russia does to us because Trump does not want to hurt Russia. And they'll find a way to tell the story that does not involve what it obviously is, which is collusion, treason, call what you want. Yeah. It's not about America or America first,
right. Well, so,
or anything like that.
So they're definitely the, you know, impetus to preserve their agenda, to make sure they get their Supreme Court justice that they want and other policy items. But also, I mean, in the indictment that came out today, and you're going to discuss that in a bit, it sounds like that other GOP leadership is also compromised on this Russia stuff. But a couple of the responses, I only saw two strong responses from GOP leadership, Jeff Flake and John McCain. Jeff Flake said that...
That's not strong.
He said this is shameful. John McCain actually issued an entire statement. He said, no prior president has ever abased himself more abjectly before a tyrant. That's pretty strong. I would say that's strong.
Yeah. Flakes was not strong. I'm not giving that qualifier, but okay. McCain's was to the extent. I mean, it was strong in terms of I'm going to say something really like powerful sounding and then do jack shit about it. So if that's what we mean by strong these days, it was strong. But that's the only one I've seen who actually even meets that bar. And not a single one has even hinted they're actually going to take action to back that up. The most significant statement I saw come out, and it wasn't worded strongly necessarily, but the fact it was issued at all is very telling. And that came from the DNI director, Coates, who just simply stated, our intel was right, Russia did interfere, didn't name names. But apparently that was not clear through the White House, so that was something he felt he had to do on his own. Which suggests there's more daylight between Trump and Coates than there had been previously.
He can get rid of Coates, though, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, people don't matter. It's just Trump now.
Yeah. He denied even knowing Putin. That was one of his defenses. He's like, why would I know Putin? Putin's like, I didn't know him. I mean, but I don't think that's true.
Well, I just keep going back to the fact that in that same July 27th speech, Trump references a conversation with Putin in which Putin used the N-word to describe Obama. So either he just totally made that up.
Which could happen, because this guy's crazy.
It could be, but also it's at least as likely that, in fact, that was a conversation he had with Putin at some point.
Mm. He also mentioned that when he went to Moscow for the pageant, you know, that Putin called him.
There was one question, one reporter brought up, without so many words, the reporter asked Mr. Putin, PP tape?
Yeah. Here's the audio. I actually want to play this audio because of how Putin responds. The response is not immediate. So let's listen to this, about a minute long.
Can you tell me what President Trump may have indicated to you about officially recognizing Crimea as part of Russia? And then secondly, sir, does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family?
President Trump and, posture of President Trump on Crimea is well known, and he stands firmly by it. He continued to maintain that it was illegal to annex it. Our viewpoint is different. We held a referendum in strict compliance with the UN Charter and the international legislation. For us, this issue, we put paid to this issue. And now to the compromising material. Yeah, I did hear these rumors that we allegedly collected compromising material on Mr. Trump when he was visiting Moscow. Well, distinguished colleague, let me tell you this. When President Trump visited Moscow back then, I didn't even know that he was in Moscow. I treat President Trump with utmost respect. But back then, when he was a private individual, a businessman, nobody informed me that he was in Moscow. Well, let's take St. Petersburg Economic Forum, for instance. There were over 500 American businessmen, the high-ranking, the high-level ones. I don't even remember the last names of each and every one of them. Well, do you think that we try to collect compromising material on each and every single one of them? Well, it's difficult to imagine another nonsense of a bigger scale than this. Well, please, just disregard these issues and don't think about this anymore again.
And I have to say, if they had it, it would have been out long ago. And if anybody watched Peter Strzok testify over the last couple of days, and I was in Brussels watching it, it was a disgrace to the FBI. It was a disgrace to our country. And you would say that was a total witch hunt. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
So keep in mind that, well, one, that's just not true, and it's refuted by all the evidence that we have. But on Twitter earlier, Rob Goldberg, who is the, you know, the former music promoter for our Emin Aguilerov, tweeted that, like, I was there, Putin did know. So, LOL. So, yeah, Putin, of course Putin knew he was there. And of course, does anyone trust Trump to be in Moscow in that kind of situation for a weekend and not do something compromising? I still have my biggest conspiracy theory. I keep saying, like, my biggest theory. I've got a million of them. But, like, one theory I keep an eye out for, because it feels like something's there, is there's this woman who kind of organized the Moscow pageant. And she was all over Trump in pictures that weekend. And her tweets back to Trump were very suggestive. And she's also connected to Torsion.
To who?
Incidentally. Torsion, Alexander Torsion, who is connected to Maria Butina, who is the newest indictment by Mueller, which literally I have not had time to read yet because it just came out.
Right. So that's our break. That's our breaking news. Is this indictment? As we were about getting ready to start recording, the news breaks.
Yeah. So Maria Butina is a gun nut. She is a Russian that works with Alexander Torsion, who is a former Russian official that now spends a lot of time in the U.S. and with the NRA. He's really into the NRA. She's with him a lot. Oh, by the way, she's a spy. We now know. Not that we really had doubts before. But she's younger. I don't know exact age, but her role in the U.S. was as a quote-unquote graduate student. And she was according to the indictment, responsible for organizing various meetings between high-level, quote, political party one representatives, a.k.a. Republican representatives. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so this is the NRA we're talking about here. It's not clear. There's one line in the indictment that I've not seen or had time to see if there's speculation about who it might be referring to. But some U.S., some American in Moscow, apparently, was also involved in these meetings between higher-level officials of U.S. and Russia. And
what if it's Carter Page? Is it Carter Page? Can
but,
he come
no
back?
No one actually would use Carter Page for anything real. I'm probably wrong about that, but like part of me does not want to believe that like that's actually something that would happen. Like you'd give that guy a real task. You'd use him, sure, but not mm-hmm. not for this. But then again, Bettina's like a baby spy, so maybe she like got, I don't know.
Yeah, and they placed their bets on Trump. I mean, Trump also is somebody I would not ever. I mean, everybody involved in this are people like Roger Stone. I'm like, none of them are people I would ever utilize.
Manafort's the closest to the real thing.
Yes.
And even he's a chucklehead. Look at how he keeps getting caught trying to send messages when he's under indictment and in jail. Oh, yeah, we also missed the fact that Trump's campaign manager is in jail and illegally contacts people from prison. Yeah, that's also a footnote to this week.
Yeah, his mugshot came out this week. Not a great look, but I've heard that he's not like living like any old prisoner. He's got a lot of fringe benefits. Like he can have a cell phone and a laptop, and I don't even understand like what the parameters of his detention are, but they're not like any old defendant.
Well, that apparently changed. That was earlier, but he did get moved to Alexandria, so I don't know what his current conditions are. And he has a high profile inmate, so you can't keep him general population, so that's not unusual or weird.
So the NRA here, so it sounds like their involvement here was to act as a money laundering organization, right? That they got money from somewhere from Russia and they laundered, because Russia cannot directly contribute to a Trump campaign. Foreign organizations, foreign countries can't do that. Foreigners can't do that. So the NRA apparently was operating as the machine that was funneling the money to the Trump campaign. And apparently $20 million worth of dark money went in Trump's campaign.
Jesus, I didn't even get that far. They've actually got that in the indictment?
Well, McClatchy had reported this. I mean, like I said, this is literally just breaking now. So I just read this right before we got on air that McClatchy's reporting.
I've seen the reporting from McClatchy. I've not seen the indictment containing it yet. And it's not just money laundering the indictment goes into. The indictment has, I mean, it's just as explicit as the last one and just as horrifying. Quote, the FBI's investigation has further revealed that Bettina and the Russian official took steps to develop relationships with American politicians in order to establish private, or as she called them, back channel, lines of communication. These lines could be used by the Russian Federation to penetrate the U.S. national decision-making apparatus to advance the agenda of the Russian Federation. Now, I don't know for sure, because I've not actually checked the indictment close enough to know. My gut guess here is that the Russian official is going to be Alexander Torshin. And that motherfucker that makes blocked sense. Me on Twitter, and I'm really pissed about it.
He blocked you on Twitter? Yeah, she was an assistant to Torshin, right? Before, I guess, getting into all of this.
Yes, and Torshin is claimed to be friends with Trump, and they regularly meet at NRA meetings. And when I saw the indictment, the first thing I thought of was an old tweet of Torshin's, which I screencapped before he blocked me, motherfucker. And, and it was from February of 2016. And he wrote, Maria Bettina is now in the United States. She writes me that D. Trump, parentheses, member of the NRA, really for cooperation with Russia.
Why the hell would anybody tweet that? What the
Because they're blatant about what they're doing. They're not trying to hide it, really.
This is February 2016.
Well, Twitter was used a lot for what Maria Bettina was doing to organize and to communicate. So, I mean, why keep it to DMs? Just put it out there as well. No one's going to believe it.
Well, it's now evidence. Now. Yeah. It's now evidence. So Bettina, this is, I mean, like she was indicted today, but she's been cooperating, I think, for a couple of months now. Apparently they.
Wait,
first...
really? Yeah. We have to come back to this next week because I want to read this damn thing. Okay.
Yeah, we will. She was first searched, her home and whatever was first searched back in April. This has been ongoing. So, all right. So I guess we'll pick this up. Hopefully we'll get a lot more information in the next week. And I'm guessing there will be more indictments.
Hopefully Mueller will slow down and I have like 10 more indictments for us to go through.
Oh, I'm sure he will, and I'm ready for it because it's just it's just it's bring been it long all enough.
I've said it before, I've thought it before, so there's no reason to think it's true now. But it does feel like we're getting closer to the point of no return, where something has to give, something has to happen because this is not sustainable. But you know, it's we've limped along for longer than I thought we'd make it into 2018, so maybe it can. But it also does feel like, once again, we're coming to a head point here.
You know, I have felt that sensation so many times, though, in the last year and a half, 2 years. And, you know, even during his testimony, it struck one of the things he said, and he was so forceful about it. I mean, he's like, you know, the one tweet he sent, he's like, you know, I sent that after Trump got up there and humiliated and berated the family of a fallen soldier, right? I mean, the family of that Muslim Humayun Khan, that the soldier. And that he humiliated this Gold Star family. And Strzok goes, you know, when that happened, I thought, no way. Million to one. Like, there's no way this guy, like, the American people will not stand for this. And it keeps happening. They keep, American people are, we're sitting down for it is what's happening. So anyway, I hope you're right. Let's see. I'm ready for it all to fold already. But anyway, in the meantime, I'm going to check out Who is America? Maybe Baron Cohen can tell me who America is, because I just don't know what it is anymore.
Yeah, and God help us, America, because we're going to need it this summer.
All right, Susan, thanks so much, and we will be back in 7 days with another 45th. Thanks, guys.
Catch you then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.